WBSM presents The Barry Richards Show. Streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Text us using app chat on the WBSM app. Now, The Barry Richards Show.
All righty, 109 on this weird looking day out there. The sky is brown. I was sitting here talking to you just before we went into the news, and I saw everybody coming out of the office next to me, and everybody was looking up in the sky, and I was wondering what the heck was going on. That maybe they were seeing traces of the sun, but and you know, this is different everywhere you go because it all depends on how the wind is blowing the smoke where you are, but. So as soon as the news hit, I walked out the front door and took a look to the north. The sky is literally brown here, where I am anyway. The sky is literally brown, and there's a tinge to it. You look out the window, and it looks brown, and cars, the lights are on. Of course, many cars have lights that go on all the time anyway, but it's just weird. I don't remember experiencing this before in my life anyway. Maybe we have. I just don't remember. I remember as a kid saying, oh, we have a smoke day today from forest fires somewhere else in the country. But I know this is weird. And this is the last couple of years we've experienced this around here. I can remember my son when he first moved out to California. And they were having some bad fires out there a few years ago. And he was on evacuation notice and wound up not having to evacuate. But he said the sky was like an orange all the time. It was just bright orange. And you could smell the smoke. And it was just, he said, it's the creepiest thing he ever experienced. And this is kind of creepy, too. It's not as bad as that, obviously. And when the fire is nowhere near us, I mean, we're talking about wildfires in Montana right now. Montana and Ontario. And the smoke is just blowing right down this way. I've mentioned it a couple of times now that for those maybe who weren't listening, if you go on Google, you can do a search. And just type in wildfire smoke and a bunch of different maps will come up and you can see, you can see where the actual smoke is coming from. So anyway, it's going to be around for the rest of today and tomorrow. Air quality alert in effect until midnight tonight. And I would assume that if it's going to stay like this, they will extend that. And we can expect more of the same tomorrow. Not quite as hot and not quite as humid tomorrow, but still hazy from smoke. So if you're just waking up and you don't know what's going on and you're looking out the window saying, damn, it looks like it's brown outside. That's what's going on. That's what you're looking at. All right. 508-996-0500 is the number, and I apologize. I just hung up on somebody by mistake. I went to reach over to the phone, and I hit the button, and whoever it was who was just calling me in, I just accidentally hung up on you, so please try again. I'm going to watch. There we go, and I'm going to throw you right on hold right there so that I make sure you're there. I apologize for that. I do that all the time. You know, talking a lot in the first hour about the immigration thing, too. And Brian Schwartzleaf, who is the Republican candidate for governor, running with Mike Minogue for governor, also Republicans, is talking about ballot fraud, which is another huge issue. And he held a news conference yesterday outside of the State House. And I got to be honest with you, I'm not sure how many people covered it in the media. This is why people other than Democrat candidates in Massachusetts have a very difficult time getting their message out because the media will run in a heartbeat. There were pictures all over of Maura Healey's coverage yesterday on the Cape when she was talking about Maine and Trump being a Nazi and all that kind of stuff. But Schwartzleaf, I'm not sure how much coverage he got outside of the State House yesterday. And, you know, of course, the signature fraud issue. We had three candidates that had issues with signature fraud. And two of the three have been essentially kicked off the ballot because they submitted signatures that were fraudulent. And Schwartzleaf said, this is one perfect reason why we need to talk about voter ID. If we can have this kind of fraud, and you know, look, the Michael Walsh, who is the Republican candidate for Attorney General, he's on the ballot, but he got on the ballot by submitting fraudulent signatures. That's fraud. And I have a problem with that. You know, Shortsleeve said this, you know, it's a common sense way to improve election integrity here in Massachusetts and everywhere. Strong systems don't wait for crisis. They prevent one. That's exactly what voter ID does. It gives the public confidence that our election is secure, fair, and worthy of the trust we can place in them, Shortsleeve said. And let's be honest, public confidence matters. When people lose faith in elections, everyone loses. Democrats lose, Republicans lose. Most importantly, our democracy loses, said Shortsleeve, pointing at the corruption in the signature collecting process that we just witnessed and saw a couple of candidates booted from the ballot. Just as recently as April, the House of Representatives rejected a budget amendment to establish voter ID requirements. While we are talking about election integrity, let's remember something else. Integrity isn't just about election day. It's about every part of the process. The people of Massachusetts watched one of the largest signature fraud scandals in recent state history unfold right here before our eyes, said Shortsleeve. Fraudulent signatures were submitted to qualify a candidate for the ballot. That's unacceptable and illegal, no matter whose campaign is involved. The standard cannot depend on whose side you are on. The rules have to mean something, and he's right. The allegations of signature fraud have exposed rifts within the state Republican Party, mainly among Shortsleeve's campaign and the Mass GOP, and his primary contender, Mike Minogue. Everybody on the Republican side wants to just cover it up like it never happened. And you're blaming Shortsleeve and Sean Oliver for making an issue out of it and bringing it to light. But Shortsleeve is right. You can't stand here and point and criticize the Democrats and all the corruption up on Beacon Hill right now, and there's a lot of it, while you cover up and ignore fraud and corruption on your own side. You got to call it out, and you got to demand it be over. You got to stop it. 508-996-0500. Thanks for hanging on, and you are the person I hung up on. I apologize for that. You're next on WBSM. Oh,
that's okay, Barry. I forgive you.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, of course, you know, Brian Shirtley's got no media coverage because they're not interested. The Boston media is not interested, but the only one that might cover him is the Boston Herald. And unfortunately, if you don't subscribe to the Boston Herald, you can't really read what's going on, you know, what they're writing about. But maybe, you know, some of us, I am not on social media. However, I am considering starting getting an Instagram account so I can get some of the social media stuff and start pushing it out there. And for the people who do have both a Facebook and an Instagram account and even X, maybe we all need to just start pushing it out ourselves on social media, you know, doing the job, you know, that the media should be doing, that the newspapers aren't going to be doing, and the television stations in Boston aren't doing. But if we all kind of make a little effort to get this information out, I think it could make a huge difference.
Well, that's exactly what started to happen in 2015 and 2016 when you know, the media has been corrupt for a long time, but people began to notice it in 2015 and 2016. People who hadn't noticed before, people who didn't believe it, when they saw the coverage of Hillary Clinton versus the coverage of Trump, they saw Russia, Russia, Russia. They saw the New York Times and the Washington Post winning Pulitzer Prizes that they still have not returned for fake news on Russia, the collusion thing, all of that kind of stuff. So people started to turn to social media, and that's how we began to communicate with each other and pass on the truth of what's going on. That gave birth to people like Nick Shirley and others who use social media to communicate with the masses to get the message out, because you can't even count on Fox News anymore.
No, even podcasts. I mean, you know, people are going to podcasts. I mean, I listen to Newsmax. That's my primary source of news. I watch Newsmax a lot, but every now and then I'll veer off, and there's a new network on TV, News Nation, but I'm not too crazy about it because that woman, I can't think of her first name, Varga, she's on, and then Cuomo's on. And I was kind of horrified by that. But then on occasion, when I really want to torture myself, I'll go to MSNL, and I'll tell you, that guy, Morning Joe, his show in the morning, that guy is a lunatic. He is just, he and everyone on his thing, Donnie Deutsch, remember Donnie Deutsch? He used to have an ad agency. And they're all a bunch of loons. When you listen to them, your head spins, and you just say, these people are crazy. You know, and speaking of that, I have a new name that I'm calling these Democrat Party, the Insane Communist Party, the ICP, is how I'm referring to them, because A, they're all insane, B, they're all communists, and it's, I think the ICP like nails them. And, you know, we have to get away from calling them socialists. They call themselves the Democratic Socialists of America, but they are not socialists. They are communists through and through. So we need to start renaming them. But I wanted to just share this with you. I went online to look up more on Healey's comments about Biddeford, Maine. And I came across another little article on a one of the newspapers up in Maine, and they were talking about how Maine depends on people buying their beer. They're saying, is it time for America to slap tariffs on Mexican beer? And they were saying that, you know, the market share of Mexican beer is like growing substantially. They said imported beer now accounts for nearly 25% of all beer consumed, up from 14% in 2013. So in 13 years, it's gone from 14% to 25%. They said more than 80% of those imports come from Mexico, where brewery workers earn $11,000 a year, versus American brewery workers who earn $60,000 a year plus full benefits. So, you know, when you go out a lot, you'll see people drinking Corona, or they'll be drinking Dos Equis or Modelo. They need to stop. And I always get a kick out of that, because if you go to Mexico, even the Mexicans don't drink Corona. I mean, they don't even drink that. That's considered like the bottom of the barrel, and no pun intended. But so we as Americans, we need to
stop. Yeah, I always get a kick out of that. We're so American. I wonder how many Mexicans go to Taco Bell.
Yeah.
or organic Roto-Rooter. Yeah, it's like when you go to a Chinese buffet and you see all of the Chinese workers sitting off in the back eating their food that they brought from home, because they don't eat that trash that they serve to you.
Or if they eat, they're eating rice or soup. They're not eating. I mean, I go to an Asian restaurant in Rhode Island in Cranston, and it's amazing because there are a lot of Asians in there, and they're all eating soup. That's what they all go in for, the soup that's like, you know, they have the broth, and then they have all the raw vegetables, and they dip it in the soup, and they eat it with their chopsticks. They're not eating mugugai pan, and they're not eating General Chow's chicken with all the fried crap on it and all the sauce and all that other garbage. They're eating the healthy stuff.
Yeah. But, there's little shrimp things that look like grub. I'm not sure what they are, but they look like grub to me. I don't know. Kathy, let me hold you right there, because we have a breaking story. We got a development here, and we're going to be hearing from Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald in about 2 minutes. Tim's just completed a discussion with Maura Healey. Remember yesterday I told you about this contract that the Healey administration has agreed to for a new courthouse out in Springfield that's going to cost $600 million to build with your money. But it would be done by private companies. And we would then lease the courthouse for the next 40 to 60 years for about $2 billion. But we wouldn't own the courthouse. At the end of the lease, the owners would own it. It would be like leasing a car. You know, you pay, and then at the end of the contract, the car dealership takes the car back. And the same thing with the courthouse. Well, what makes this an interesting story is, all of that I just said is interesting, but two very connected people in Massachusetts politics One is Conan Harris, who is the husband of Ayanna Pressley, the congresswoman. And he's involved in a Boston-based real estate development firm. He co-owns it. Well, guess who's developing this? $600 million courthouse with $2 billion in rent guaranteed. Ayanna Pressley's husband, the guy who spent 10 years in prison, I believe it was on guns and drugs charges? And not only him, but John Barrows, who is the interim executive director of the Massachusetts Convention Center Authority, is another connected person who is involved in this deal. This was a hurry-up deal, according to reporting from Tim this morning, Tim Dunn of the Boston Herald. Hurry-up deal. Get it done. And they wanted to get it done really quickly. Maybe so that nobody would notice it. But the Massachusetts Division of Capital Asset Management and Maintenance announced in a July 2nd press conference that it had awarded a $600 million contract to construct the new Roderick Ireland Courthouse. And then the courthouse would be leased back to the state, again, for 40, maybe 60 years, cost of about $2 billion. Ayanna Pressley's husband is involved in this. He's he owns a co-owner of one of the companies that's a real estate company that's involved in this whole deal. And also John Barrows, who is the interim executive director of the Massachusetts Convention Center Authority. I mean, it stinks to high hell. But this is politics as usual in Massachusetts. The fiscal watchdog group, the Mass Fiscal Alliance, calling on Governor Healey to nullify this contract and to denounce it. But just a short time ago, Tim Dunn from the Boston Herald caught up with the governor. He hasn't even had a chance to write the story yet, and he's on the phone with me right now I think I got you with me now, Tim. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you, Barry. I accidentally pressed off on the phone for a second, but I'm here with you.
All right, so you caught up with the governor, as you wrote this morning on the Boston Herald website in the paper. Mass Fiscal Alliance is calling on Healey to nullify this contract and to denounce it. You just caught up with the governor a short time ago. What did she have to say about this?
Yeah, so she just had a media scrum following an announcement that she's going to be doing some school funding and a supplemental budget, but I digress. I asked her about this, and it was a really packed media scrum, so I didn't have a chance to really get more than one question, but I asked her, should these politically connected bidders be winning these massive lucrative state contracts? And you can't get more politically connected than the husband of Ayanna Pressley or the interim executive director of the MCCA. And she, as far as she told me, I can't transcribe it right now. I'm still trying to do that. But she essentially said there's no problems with it. It was the best deal for the taxpayers, and that the trial courts reviewed it, and that it's all a great deal. And it's all for the taxpayers. And no ethical concerns she seemed to mention or be concerned about.
So this guy, Ayanna Pressley's husband, this guy spent 10 years in prison, right, for drugs and I believe guns as well and everything. He comes out, he's got a public taxpayer-funded job in the Boston City Hall. And, she's worth rolled pennies a couple of years ago. Now, all of a sudden, you're worth $8 million. And, he has been connected with other government approved and paid for projects. And now this, a $600 million deal to build this and to, I guess, manage it or lease it back to the state for 40, maybe 60 years for $2 billion. Where do I sign up one of these things?
I know, Barry. It's crazy. The amount of back scratching that Conan Harris has got. Michelle Wu has given him, I think, at least one or two pretty lucrative deals. Not as big as this $2 billion one, but with that Ayanna Pressley net worth being $8 million, that was as far as I can tell at 2024. She's certainly going to be a lot more wealthy now, and she's already been pretty wealthy. For who knows? We all assume probably because of her her ex-jailbird husband's lucrative career that he's been getting a lot of help on through her connections with. And, you know, again, you go from, I think her net worth, I wrote in my story, was $12,500 in 2018 when she was Boston City Councilor. And after 6 years of making an $175,000 salary, Barry, she's now worth over $8 million, soon to be a lot more.
Well, I'd love to know, you know, what exactly the kind of instructional counseling that her husband got in jail, because I'm sure they'd love to teach it in the rest of the jails. How do you go from being, you know, a jailbird selling drugs and dealing with guns or whatever it was that he was in jail for 10 years for, and come out and become a multimillionaire? I mean, that's the kind of counseling that we need to give to our inmates so that they don't, you know, become repeat offenders. I'd like to get the secrets. Is there a book somewhere where we can read his secrets to success?
I wish I could find it, Barry. You know, it seems like right now, from my outside perspective, from what I can gather, if you know anybody in your listening area who is you know, in and out of jail, make sure your spouse or significant other runs for Congress or runs for even a state rep seat or a state senate seat. You'll get your back scratched all the way out of jail.
You know, and this kind of stuff. I mean, Maura Healey had the no-bid contracts for the no-tell motels when the illegal immigrants were being put up. She, all of the food vendors, she picked them, no-bid contracts. We had the highway vending thing with the Monica Tibbetts nut that went kind of off the rails, cost her job. I mean, it just seems like this is a pattern that keeps repeating itself.
Yeah, and Mass Fiscal, actually, they had a person there, Jason Lewis. He's a really good worker for Mass Fiscal. They were there at that press conference, and she recognizes who Mass Fiscal is by now. And if she ignores them more than she'll try to ignore me, even, Barry. And they actually had called her out. As soon as she was done answering my question, they had said, well, what about the Apple Green service debacle? We just had this happen where a politically connected bidder, this time it was in Ireland, won a contract for $1 billion over a Massachusetts-based firm. You know, what's going on with this? And that was under Monica Tibbetts nut. But again, you know, Healey will pass the torch either to somebody like Monica Tibbetts nut and fire her and blame her, or she'll just, you know, whitewash it and say, hey, no, it's okay. It's all great.
So, you know, I've been to a number of these kind of press conferences before, and I can just picture what you went through. So you threw that question out to her, and I'll bet you got some really snotty looks from the rest of the reporters there, right? I bet you did. I know. I've been there. I've been in those kind of scrums before.
Oh, Barry, you'll laugh at this, Barry. You'll laugh at this. Because we always joke about how, you know, the Boston media especially doesn't really ask any questions anymore. I might be caught on WBZ TV tonight rolling my eyes, because right before I asked my question, and with all the stuff going on with ICE in Maine, with this contract with the courthouse, with the budget being filed last week, all these important things, WBZ, when they got their one chance today, they asked her if she really is happy about daylight savings time. That was their most important question.
Boy, I'll tell you, Liz Walker and Jack Williams got out of there just in time. But I mean, that's the media in Boston right now. Yeah, I was gonna ask you, was there a follow up question based on your question? Was the first on the courthouse deal, right? Nobody else asked about that. You asked that. Nobody else had asked about it yet.
Yeah, I asked it in the middle of the pack. She was first asked about ICE in Maine, and she went on a big rant about that. Then I got her. But yeah, no one. She ignored Mass Fiscal's follow-up, and everyone moved on to other stuff after that.
Yeah, exactly. And nobody pursued it. It's not like, you know, Channel 5, you know, put their hand up. But Governor, what about the contract that Tim was just talking about? Or, you know, the Boston Globe or none of these other people. No, but nobody pursued it at all. It just died right there. She says it's okay. Yeah, this is fine. Great contract. And everybody just accepted that and moved on to something else like daylight savings time. That's kind of like the questions that Joe Biden used to get on the campaign trail when the press would ask him, what's your favorite flavor of ice cream and stuff like that. And then they'd ask Trump stuff like, well, when did you stop raping women in changing rooms at New York department stores? You know, it was the kind of stuff that went on back then. This is unbelievable. But, you know, this is, I think, a big one. I think Maura Healey's suffering right now from falling numbers. All of the polling is showing that she's got some problems moving forward here. And another scandal. And I don't know if she is going to see this slide off like Teflon or whether this is going to dog her going forward. I mean, what's your guess?
I think there's definitely an opportunity for whoever wins the gubernatorial endorsement in September, wins that primary, whether it's Renault or short sleeve. These scandals, Barry, it's not just the scandals. If she had successes that people could name that were obvious that you just couldn't debate, these scandals might go away a little more, but I think there's a real opportunity. It might be narrow in a Democrat blue state, but I believe it's certainly there for Short Sleeper Minogue to pounce on this and to even be elected on this if they play their cards right and things roll their way. Because, again, you have a governor who has no real accomplishments, and both sides have been pulled on that and have expressly stated they can't really name any accomplishments of hers, on top of just scandal after scandal. Amar Cook, Apple Green, Springfield Courthouse, the energy boondoggle, you know, the bogus energy relief she gave us in January. It just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. And 17, I think the number was 17% in the recent poll that asked what Maura Healey's greatest accomplishment was, and I think 17% said nothing, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah, 17% said nothing, and I think it was over like 40%, Barry. I think it was like 44% who said they just couldn't name one.
Couldn't name anything, yeah. So, yeah. How about scandals? That's her greatest accomplishment in looking the other way. I think she's going to have to. Yeah. I have a feeling you're going to be chewing on her butt cheeks as the days go forward on this, and I can't wait to see how she squirms on this. But
me either.
You know what? I can't even imagine the state GOP, the Mass GOP, has put a statement out on this yet. I haven't been on their webpage yet today, but I don't even imagine they've had a statement. They should be all over this. And, you know, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we just got out of that scrum, so I'm actually going to be reaching out to them in a minute, sending them the copy of it. But I'm sure they will. And, you know, and just as a side note before I have to split on you, is she also, for the first time in my count, has publicly mentioned Brian Shortsleeve and Mike Minogue. You can tell she's really getting her feelers up and trying to get her back against the wall against who she might be running against in November. And she called them out when she was asked by ICE and what's going on in Maine and the whole stopping of the cars thing going on right now. She went on a whole rant, as you'd expect, against Trump and ICE. They're killers. They are, you know, raping and pillaging our neighborhoods, all that kind of stuff. And then she all of a sudden went on another additional minute or two rant against Brian Shortsleeve and Mike Minogue. And I'm paraphrasing, but essentially the message was they don't deserve to be governor if they support Trump and support ICE.
Okay. When you get chance and you, get a chance to look at your notes and you can... maybe send me the exact quote she said on that. I'd appreciate that very much. Thanks for taking some time and coming on. I know you're just leaving the press availability, and you got to get your story written up. So I do appreciate you sharing with my listeners what you found out.
Awesome, Barry. Will do. I'll send you that, and thanks for having me on.
All right, Tim. We'll talk soon. Tim Dunn, Boston Herald. Amazing. This is okay with Maura Healey. Yeah, good contract. Good for the people of Massachusetts. Wow. Nothing to see here, right? Just keep moving. Move on, move on. All right, quick break. We're coming right back. Stay with us.
Back to Barry Richard on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
All righty, welcome back to the program. It is 1:40 on a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful day, he says facetiously. Yeah, it's hot, it's muggy, it's brown out there, it is smoky, we have bad air quality, it is just not a real nice day to be out there, so probably a good day to stay in, listen to the radio, you can take us out, but you know, tomorrow night's going to be a little bit better, and you're going to want to know that, because tomorrow night is Joe Jesus' 50s night in New Bedford, thousands of people gathering downtown to celebrate classic cars, chrome poodle skirts, and rock and roll, good old-fashioned rock and roll. WBSM will broadcast 9 hours of authentic 1950s music connecting listeners across the South Coast through the event. Whether you are there in person or miles away, you'll be part of the celebration when you listen to WBSM. Tune in on 1420 AM or 99.5 FM, WBSM.com or the WBSM app. The soundtrack to Joe Jesus's 50 Night. Tomorrow night only on WBSM, brought to you by some great sponsors like Glassman Automotive, Riccardi's Restaurant, Market Basket. It is becoming one of those events like the Portuguese Feast where you go to and you run into everybody that you haven't seen since grade school. So it's a good time. And the humidity is going to be a little bit less tomorrow, so it should be a fun evening to go downtown. And check it out. Check out the cars. Check out the people. Just stand on the street corner. Everybody will walk by you that you've ever known in your life at some point. You'll see everybody. Unfortunately, you won't see Joe Jesus. He left us a few years ago, but the event is carried on in his memory each year. And you're going to like it. Good lively music from the 1950s. Really good stuff. All right. Again, thanks to Tim Dunn for what he does. You know, I love Tim. Tim's a great guy. He's not only a wonderful human being, but he reminds me of me when I was that age. Used to hustle to get to the truth, you know, to ask the questions. And, you know, I had to ask Tim because I've been where he is. He's in a day and age where there are very few people who are even qualified to be out there asking questions and covering for the news. You know, the folks on TV, they're all beautiful people, right? They're all just cutesy pies and all that kind of stuff, but they probably haven't got a whole lot of experience. They don't have a lot of experience in you know, seeking the truth, and that's what a reporter's supposed to do. And Tim knows that. He works hard to get the truth. And, you know, so you go to an event, and then there's a media scrum around the subject matter. In this case, it was Maury Healy. And, you know, after the first couple of obligatory questions about the event, you start to ask questions about other things. And so we've got this huge scandal percolating now. Another one around the Healy administration over the awarding of this contract for the courthouse. And nobody's asking about it. Tim gets his turn to yell out a question. And the first thing he asks is about the courthouse. Now, when you're in a media scrum, you get one question. If your question does not suit the person you're asking it of, you get one question. I say, you don't even get a follow-up. That's it. One question. Next. And so your hope is that if you are the first one, I would always want to be the first questioner because I wanted to be the one to bring up the touchy subject. But I wouldn't let go because I got a loud mouth. You know me, I got a big mouth. You can hear me from here to the moon, right? So I would yell over the next reporter. If I didn't get my question answered, I'd yell over the reporter that was up next. Wait a minute, Governor, you didn't answer my question, but what about this? And nobody in the press does that. You know, here's the problem. So I knew Tim, that's why I asked him. I knew as soon as Tim asked this question, Governor gives him a, you know, snarky little answer, like, go away, you little pest. The next reporter should jump right in and say, but Governor, what about that? Well, I asked him, I said, I'll bet you get all these snarky little looks, you know, smirks and everything else from folks in the press corps, right, when you ask the tough question, because they don't play those games. They don't know how to do that stuff. Nor are they interested. You know, they want a cute little thing. I don't know who the anchors are on Channel 4. I don't watch television news, but you know, I can just see the anchor. She's out there, right? Jezebel, the reporter, right? She's out there, and they say, "So, Jezebel, what'd you talk about with the governor today?" Well, oh my God, Maury Healy was so happy to hear that daylight savings time is coming back, and you know what I mean. That's what the kind of stories they look for. They don't want to have to peel back the layers of a fraudulent contract award like this. That's work. That requires thinking. The ability to understand and comprehend. They don't do that. Tim does, thank God. So you get one shot and you hope that you get something there. And you hope the next reporter is going to follow up because you certainly will not get a chance. So Tim asked this question, which is the question of the day, and the very next reporter is from Channel 4, and she asked the governor, what do you think about daylight savings time? Ooh, one of the burning questions of our time, right? Hey, is it ever going to get better? Quick break. We're coming back. Stay with us.
Back to Barry Richard on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
All righty, welcome back. It is 1:49 on a Wednesday afternoon. And so on a similar issue here to a lot of what we've been talking about today, voter integrity and scandals and illegal immigration and all of that. We got comments today from Senator Elisa Slotkin, who's a Democrat from Michigan, and said the Save America Act would make it harder for Democrats to win elections, prompting Republicans to argue that she finally said the quiet part out loud about Democrats' opposition to stricter election laws. It's not that they don't think people should show IDs or this, that, and the other. It's just going to make it difficult for us to get elected. Yeah. Slotkin made the remarks in a video unearthed by Breitbart News that was recorded the day after the Senate narrowly rejected the Save America Act in June. The bill failed 50 to 48 after four Republicans joined Democrats in voting against it. The Save America Act has become one of the biggest legislative fights in Congress. President Donald Trump has made it his top priority. Trump refused to sign a housing bill on Friday to protest Congress's failure to get the Save America Act through. So during this address to Indiana State Democrat Party members on the video, Slotkin celebrated the Senate's rejection of the Save America Act. And she claimed the bill would allow the Trump administration to, quote, rig our democracy. Rig our democracy. Again, not one single member of any single press group asked her, what do you mean by that? How is that possible? What do you mean? Nobody. Just leave it dangling there. It would be hard for any Democrat in any state to win any election, she said. Slotkin did not explain how the legislation would hurt Democratic politicians. No, because nobody asked her. Nobody asked her. Nobody sat down and said, what the hell are you talking about? The Save America Act would require documentary proof of U.S. citizenship to register to vote and photo ID to cast the ballot in federal elections, and mandates that states take additional steps to remove non-citizens from voter rolls. Trump has argued for months that Democrats oppose the Save America Act because it would make it harder for them to cheat in elections, claiming the party benefits politically from weak voter verification measures and the votes of people who are not eligible to vote. Slotkin apparently confirms this. And you get the same old gobbledygook. Women won't be able to vote. Minorities won't be able to vote. No, because women are minority. These people are calling women a minority stupid. When you think about it, these people are too stupid to be able to vote if you got to have an ID. And, you know, the women and minorities would be like, yeah, man. We're coming back after the break. All right, welcome back. 1:57 on a Wednesday afternoon. Let's grab another call before the news, and you're next in WBSM. Good afternoon.
Hi, Barry.
Hi.
It's not a good day to walk outside.
No. I tried a little while, and it was too much. I came back.
Yeah, I tried, and my eyes are burning, and my throat's not burning.
Yeah.
It must be... just like what China has, you know, for all the pollution they have.
Yeah, right.
You're talking about the corruption in this state.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. There is a lot of corruption, but I don't see anybody's going to solve it unless the government steps in and cleans house over here, because... you know, there is so much corruption.
Well, you know, yeah, it would be nice if we can get the DOJ in here, and it'd be nice if we had, a Republican governor that can work with the Republican DOJ and say, hey, look, you know, we got this, that, and the other thing going on here. But first of all, we got to get rid of the criminals that are running the asylum.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah, a young guy, but I don't know if you remember. I remember, because I had a good memory. Back in the 50s, used to go for a job, and on the application, they asked you, yes or no, are you a member of the Communist Party?
I do remember that. That. Yes.
You remember that? Yeah. Yeah. And look, we're going in. Now we're going in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Probably if they ask you that, yeah, you've got to be a member of the Communist Party.
Yeah, if you're not a member, if you don't check yes, you don't get the job. There you go. That's a whole different kettle of fish these days. Yeah, absolutely.